entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Good morning. Welcome in to the best of Downtown, your Sunday morning, March 25th, 2018. Rich Kimble and Carrie Haskell here. Our program is brought to you this morning and every afternoon by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Guests of the program come your way on the G&M Family Market phone line. Fresh products delivered every day, great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, Dunkin' Donuts, Amato's right on site. Everything you want, you're likely to find at G&M Family Market, corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden, open every day, 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. Our weekly look back at some of our favorite recent conversations. Very good ones for you this morning and a wide variety of conversations as well as we talk about efforts to honor a local athletic legend and civil rights legend. We talk music with the guy often called the Zelig of rock music, seemed to be everywhere in the 1960s. A fantasy baseball preview with Al Melchior of Fangraphs and Fantrax. And we talk with Stephanie Drake, who played Meredith, Don Draper's secretary, on the last three seasons of Mad Men. That's what we've got lined up for you here on our Sunday morning. Getting ready to swing into the last week of March. And, Carrie, I got to say, I will not be unhappy to turn the page and move on to April at the end of the week.
Yes. Hoping April is without snow.
That would be nice.
Be a nice touch.
Keep our fingers crossed. Warm weather, sunshine, all those good things. Of course, Downtown Madness will wrap up in early April. We've had a great time so far. Right now, up on our website, you can vote. We're into the second round of the Maine and the national brackets, and you can cast your vote there by going to the website at downtownwithrichkimble.com. Let's get things rolling this morning, though. Longtime friend of the show, Ed Rice, journalist, activist, and teacher, has written about Old Town native Penobscot Indian Lewis Sock Alexis, who broke baseball's color barrier back in 1897 when he made it to the major leagues as a member of the Cleveland Spiders. Career cut short by injury, alcoholism, but certainly has earned his place among some of the great sports legends and civil rights leaders. Ed has written about him in his book Baseball's First Indian and is also now spearheading an effort to build a permanent memorial, a statue honoring Lewis Sock Alexis. We talked about that with Ed earlier this week on Downtown.
One of the things that after I published the book and I had discovered some things about baseball in the 19th century, and I know you're aware that things are a completely different picture for professional baseball. It's nowhere near as popular in the 19th century as town ball is, as the college game is. And so when people just look at Lewis's record of only playing 94 professional games, they're missing a bigger picture. And so when I see organizations like the Cleveland baseball team, when I see organizations like the Baseball Hall of Fame, when I see organizations like Sports Illustrated, not only not get the story right, but publish myths and publish inaccuracies, it seems to me that I'd love to see the people of Maine say, no, he's not a footnote to history just because of his professional career. He was one of the greatest baseball players of his era, and we can do better. And so, armed with a couple of people from the island, and I've made up my mind that this board of directors will be at least 50% Native American. There will be no question about, you know, what our intent is, and then I'm working together with several people who really, really care about this. We're going to make the biggest push we can for the state of Maine to do right by Lewis Sock Alexis.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because it's not just about Sock Alexis. It's not just about the Penobscot Nation. But it's a baseball story. It's a sports story. And it's a Maine story.
Yes. And I know that back in the day when you were working with those charming youngsters in middle school and you had Native American studies class, the Lewis's name comes up. Mm. My book has been out of print for a number of years now. I was grateful to the publisher for putting up 4,000 copies. The libraries have them. And so people can look this up, you know, and they'll discover that he was an extraordinary player. In fact, indeed, he was the inspiration for the myth of Frank Merriwell of
right.
Yale. And if there's a greater fictional baseball player in American literature, I don't think there is. And the only other one is Casey at the Bat. Of course, he wasn't successful. Lewis
That's
was.
Right.
So here we've got a figure. I like to say this a lot. You've probably heard me say it. In Bangor, we have a statue, a mythic figure who did mythic things. In Lewis Sock Alexis, we have a real man who did mythic things on the baseball field.
So let's talk, first of all, about cost, Ed. Looks like the estimates that you have to do at least an 8-foot statue with a base, somewhere between $80,000 and $100,000.
Exactly. When my very dear friend Ted Bear Mitchell and I talk about this, we'd like to have a 9-foot statue or something bigger so that it will show to great advantage. But yes, I've spoken with a number of sculptors. It won't take people long to just think about some of the really outstanding sculptures in the area, figures that have been done. We'd love it if it was a main sculptor, but of course, this is open. Once, you know, anyone who's got an interest, we'd love to hear from. But I've been told that, yes, it's got to be at least 8 foot high on a foundation base, and it should be of bronze for the most quality equipment so that it'll last.
Now, in terms of where, you've said in the press materials, almost anywhere. There are a lot of great options, whether it's Indian Island, whether it's Old Town, whether it's Bass Park, anywhere would work.
Yes, you're exactly right. One of the ones that I hadn't thought of, and this was Ted Bear Mitchell's idea. Ted, for those who don't maybe are thinking, I know that name, where do I know it from? He was the last Penobscot representative to the Maine legislature. And so Ted said, you know, Capitol Park would be a great place. And the next thing he said really got me. And he said, the kids' tours, they come constantly through there. And just imagine, there would be Sock right there on that pedestal. And I mentioned to him that when I took my papers and all the pictures I'd collected and everything, I donated them to the Maine State Library and Museum. It's a perfect. Yeah. You're there. Now you can go into the Library and Museum and see the pictures and the photographs. This would be great. So, yes, the idea is, it's not an auction, but who wants this the most? Right. Who will come to us and say, here's the idea that we've got. Castini played on a field that still exists, Rich, the old Fort George ramparts. Right. Of course, the field is in complete disarray, but that's where the field was. Fields in Augusta, fields, Poland Springs down in, on those grounds. So let's just see who's interested, who will be in touch, and let's see it. Yes, on the island makes a lot of sense. There's a place that they had a school, and it's right next to the cemetery. And so they're considering the idea of right there, mm-hmm. That's where we'd put the statue.
Ed Rice in studio with us. You mentioned Ted Bear Mitchell. Who else is on board with you?
John Bear Mitchell. This one's really important to me because I bet a lot of people out there who took the Native American Studies program at the University of Maine, John has a wonderful class. We've taken turns speaking at our various college classes over the year, and John is a Passamaquoddy storyteller, just a quality human being. And so one of the things that we had in mind was, let's make this a board of people who are just committed to this, aren't concerned about what's in it for them. It's a nonprofit. There are no salaries. In fact, we had to ask for office space at one of the community colleges I spoke at, because I don't have a place in Bangor to take anyone. So there's no overhead. We wanted to have Chris Sock Alexis on our board. The problem is that right now he's an officer with the Penobscot Nation. Yeah. So you just said, yeah, there's an obvious conflict of interest. And Chris is already conflicted. He wants it too desperately to be on the island. And that's understandable, of course. But we need to be open-minded on this. We're hoping that Chris will serve as a liaison for us. And so we're talking about it in those terms. Yes. I bet the journalist in you would ask me the question, well, are the people on the Penobscot Island going to be all this thrilled about it? Hey, we're not out to make everybody happy. It's right. An impossibility. Where is the best place for this statue? That's our goal.
You've got a website, sockalexis.net. You've got a Facebook group and page as well. And there's an email address, too, for anybody who wants to get in touch, get more information, or even help out with the effort.
Absolutely. That is Lewis Sock Alexis Monument. You run the words all together. You don't need uppercase. Lewis Sock Alexis Monument at gmail.com. We have a post office box, 318 Old Town, Maine 04468. Both Ted and I are the only ones that have access to that post office box for donations and things. We're asking, you know, the granny who listens to the Red Sox games, and since she's on a fixed income and she'd like to send $5, you bet. I'm going to be one of the friends of Sock Alexis too. I don't have that kind of money. We want everyone from one level all the way up to maybe a corporate involvement. That would be great. We have some really, really interesting people that we're reaching out to, and a celebrity already on board with us, Tess Gerritsen.
That's wonderful.
Who, you know, internationally renowned author. This is Ted's friend. She says that whenever she goes to a party, the only other person of color there is Ted. So anyway, Tess is a very good friend, and I was going to let Ted be the one to, you know, release the news, but he did it at the press conference. So I said, okay, it's open season now, right?
There
so
you said, go.
Absolutely. Tess has agreed. She will be an honorary member of the board, but she's already pledged a substantial sum to them.
Well, that's wonderful.
It is.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask you as well your reaction to the news. Finally, after much effort from you through the years and others, Cleveland finally, in some fashion, not as completely as we would like, but in some fashion, phasing out Chief Wahoo.
God bless Rob Manfred.
Yes.
He played the card, didn't he, Rich?
Yeah.
You and
yeah.
I know
yeah,
that yeah. All-Star
you want
game.
That All-Star game.
In
yeah.
Progressive here. So we need to know, your listeners, I don't know if they know or not, but I've been working with staff people at the Cleveland baseball team since back in 1999 when I discovered their media biography on Sock Alexis in their media guide, and it had all kinds of mistakes. There are people at the lower levels who get it about all of this, but this is the Dolan family, and they know how much money they can make on this Chief Wahoo mascot, logo, whatever you have. And so they're making a fortune. And so at least we've got it off the players' uniforms on the field. But don't think that they're not selling all that merchandise right. in their store.
Well, and also managed to retain the rights, so if somebody else wants to sell that merchandise.
Yeah, I've got one important thing to say about that. And when we look at all of this, when we consider the idea of this logo, it had nothing to do with Lewis. It came up in the late 1940s. You know, there it will be absolutely, if Cleveland makes a donation, that will be great, but we won't be concerned about the nickname either.
Right.
And he did inspire it, and we certainly won't be worried about Chief Wahoo. This will be on our terms that this will be, and there won't be any words on there that would bother anybody.
That's Ed Rice discussing his efforts to build a statue honoring Lewis Sock Alexis here on the Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning. When we return, Meredith, Don Draper's longest tenured secretary. Matter of fact, she outlasted him at the company. Actress Stephanie Drake coming up next on the Best of Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on in to Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor. Our next guest on Downtown appeared as Meredith, secretary to Don Draper, to Roger Sterling, on the last three seasons of the smash hit Mad Men. Stephanie Drake is her name. We had a chance to catch up with her recently and talk about her time on the series and projects she's got coming up. Stephanie, I have to think it had to be a little intimidating stepping into the cast of not only such an established show, but one that was already a bit of a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, definitely. They were already an established little family, and here I come out of nowhere. But I will say that the season I started, there had been a long hiatus in between season 4 and season 5. So when I came in, everyone was just happy to be back. Because after season 4, no one really knew what was going to happen and if the show was going to return. So I remember coming in for my very first table read of my first episode, and everyone was just in really good spirits.
So you come in as Don Draper's secretary, Meredith, and yeah, I don't know how John Hamm felt about this, but you stole every single scene you were in.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sure he didn't mind.
How much fun was it?
Gracious scene partner.
How much fun was it to play Meredith? Because you gave her such a personality and was so very dynamic a character.
Oh gosh, it was so much fun. I would get the script pages usually just about the night before we would start shooting, so there wasn't a whole lot of time. But I'd get the pages, I'd read through them real quick to kind of see what was going on, make sure I wasn't getting fired, because that happened a lot to the secretaries.
Yes.
And I'd go through them, and oh gosh, they always gave me so much fun stuff to do. It was a blast.
Well, and it's got to be really fulfilling as an actor as well, after a couple of years, a few years away now, to look back and realize that you were a big part of one of the most successful, but also one of the best television series in history.
I still can't believe it happened. I mean, at that point in my career, I had only done a few commercials, and I wasn't going out for many TV shows or movies or anything like that. And my agent called with the audition, and I'd actually never seen the show. My parents watched it, and they always told me to watch it. So I was like, well, I don't know, maybe I'll get to it someday. So the night before my audition, I watched an episode and I was like, gosh, this show's really good. And then, of course, once I got the part, I went back and watched the whole thing. And yes, it is a really good show.
You mentioned commercials, and you've had a very successful career doing commercials. Maybe my favorites of the series you did with Rob Riggle. Those were wonderful spots.
Oh, yeah, those were so much fun. That started as I was going to do two of those. And then a few months later, they called me to do two more. That's ideal for an actor. You don't have to audition again. And they just call and say, hey, come on back. And he was so much fun to work with.
You've also done stand-up as well. What's the scariest part of being a stand-up comedian?
Well, I don't know if I'd consider myself a stand-up comedian, but I've dabbled in it. It's everything about it is scary. You know, you spend all this time writing material that's so personal, and you just hope you get a chuckle out of people. I was lucky. I mean, I took a class that really, you know, kind of teaches you how to do it. I think I thrive in a classroom setting rather than just going to an open mic somewhere in Hollywood where, you know, maybe there's five people in the audience. I did well in a classroom setting where at the end, when you do your you're set, you invite all your friends. So, of course, they're going to laugh and they're going to make you feel really, really good.
You've done a lot of voiceover work, too, including a number of audiobooks. Well, what's that like when you're doing that? You're carrying the whole story, especially if you're the narrator of an entire story.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. You go in, you have a director there sitting in the booth next to yours to, you know, help you figure things out if things get confusing. I mean, some of the ones I've done, the series Foxcraft, I did three books in the series, and there were so many different characters, and, you know, a year would go by before I would go back and do the next book. And so the director would always be there to kind of, you know, remind me what I did, play things back for me from the previous book. And yeah, it's a lot of work. You sit there and you read for about 6 hours straight. The hardest part is staring at a computer screen for that long. I'm not used to that. And oh my goodness, by the end, my eyes would go cross-eyed. I would see words that weren't there, and the director would be like, wait, what did you just say? I was like, oh, does it not say that? It's hard, but oh, it's so much fun too. I mean, getting to do all the different voices and inflections, and especially for these great young adult books, it's really fun.
We're talking with Stephanie Drake here on Downtown. You've also worked with a couple of friends of our show. Tell me about the experience of doing Cups and Robbers with our friend Ileana Douglas.
Oh my goodness, she's wonderful. We saw that a few years ago. That actually came to me through a girl I went to high school with in Baltimore. She lives out here in LA, and she works on all kinds of different TV shows behind the scenes. And she has a friend. This was his very first directing gig. He wrote it and directed it. His name's Jim Simone. And she read the script and thought of me for it. And he reached out, and I said, absolutely, I'll do it. It was such a fun experience. Ileana is so freaking funny. I mean, she can just be sitting there looking at something, and I would start laughing. She's that funny. And I think it turned out so good, and it's been showing at all kinds of different film festivals around the country, which is super exciting.
And you also did a film with another friend of our show we have on quite a bit, because she's a Maine native, Katie Asselton.
Oh, that's right. She is from Maine. I love Katie. She's wonderful. We got to do a movie together last summer called Deep Murder, and I can't say enough good things about her.
Well, you know, she's from Maine. Yeah, well, all those people are great in Maine.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I've been to Maine.
Oh, you have?
And I have. So the summer before I started high school, my mom, my uncle, my grandpa, and I went on this trip to Maine, and we flew in, let me see if I get this right, we flew into Rockland.
Yes, yeah.
And then we took a ferry over to, I want to say it was called North Haven.
Yes, indeed, absolutely, beautiful spot.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was New Haven or North Haven, and I don't remember a lot about the trip, but I do remember, no matter where you were going, if you were walking or driving in a car or in a boat, everyone would wave to each other.
Yeah, they do that here where we are too. Sometimes just with one finger, but usually it's the whole hand.
Yeah, it was the whole hand. And I got really into it. I was waving to everybody. It was so nice. But that's what I remember from that trip.
So what are you working on? What have you got coming up for projects, Stephanie?
So I'm actually in post-production right now on a short film that I wrote and produced and starred in, which was the first time I've ever done anything like that. It was very hard, but very fun, and hopefully will be rewarding. So that's called After Meredith. It's loosely based on my life right after I finished working on Mad Men. and kind of that weird transition from being on a show to having absolutely nothing to do.
Well, that sounds great.
So I think it will be quite, I think it'll be relatable for a lot of people. And so, yeah, I'm supposed to get our first edit of it actually tomorrow.
Well, that's wonderful.
We'll keep, we'll keep working on that. And then I have one other movie coming out later this year called All the Creatures Were Stirring. It's another horror comedy, and it's premiering at the Chattanooga Film Festival in April.
Well, fantastic. Well, we wish you luck with both of those products. You can follow along with Stephanie's career. Go to her website, stephaniedrake.com. It's been a delight for us to talk with you this afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'll see you on Twitter.
Stephanie Drake of Mad Men here on The Best of Downtown, your Sunday morning, brought to you by Quirk Motor City Used Vehicle Center with locations in Augusta, Bangor, Belfast, and Portland. It's your car. Find it at quirkauto.com. When we return, a rock and roll legend as a singer, songwriter, musician, producer, Al Cooper's up next here on Z62 Retro Radio.
Honey, what's all that barking in the neighborhood?
The dogs are saying something.
Let's listen closer.
You know, Green Acres Kennel Shop in Bangor is more than our home away from home. They're your pet food superstore. My owners have always trusted Green Acres Kennel Shop for the best price and selection. They carry a large variety of Nutrisource pet foods formulated with the best ingredients and made with integrity. Ooh, they even have a rewards program. I save my owners money by earning points for every purchase.
We interrupt this message to bring you the cats of the neighborhood.
Meow. It's not all about the dogs around here. Don't forget your feline friends. Green Acres Kennel Shop is my parents' pet food headquarters. They buy me the best brands of dry and canned choices.
Well, dear, the dogs and cats around here know best. Time to make Green Acres Kennel Shop our new pet food store.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, Union Street, Bangor. Online at greenacreskennel.com.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, our home away from home.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo! Sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at umainealumnicard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
At this busy time of year, there's nothing better than a place that offers you one-stop shopping. That place is G&M Family Market on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, of course a Dunkin' Donuts and an Amato's right on site. Stop into G&M Family Market every day of the week from 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, and if they don't have what you're looking for, they'll make every effort to get it next time. G&M Family Market, Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. That is, of course, the legendary Al Cooper, often called the Zelig of rock music. He has indeed been everywhere, from writing This Diamond Ring for Gary Lewis and the Playboys to playing the organ on Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone and the Rolling Stones' You Can't Always Get What You Want. Was friends with Hendrix, discovered Lynyrd Skynyrd, and so much more. We covered a lot of bases with him when he joined us recently here on Downtown. When I mentioned to people that we were going to talk with you on the show, it seems like everybody I talked to thought of something different and said, oh, Al Cooper with Mike Bloomfield, and Al Cooper who produced Lynyrd Skynyrd, Blues Project, George Harrison, Dylan, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Alice Cooper. Obviously, that versatility has been a hallmark of your many decades in the music business. Is that something you set out to do when you began this journey at about 14?
Well, the only thing that I set out to do is I wanted to be a musician. And then I wanted this, and then I wanted that, but it was all within the realm of music.
Well, you've certainly accomplished that. One of the big jump starts to your career was working as a contract songwriter with a couple of other guys and coming up with big hits for Gary Lewis and the Playboys and then Gene Pitney. How much did that open doors for you?
Well, the doors were open. You just had to marry the right song to the right producer because... This Diamond Ring was originally written for the R&B group, The Drifters. And when I heard the Gary Lewis record, I was very disappointed.
Yeah, was that Snuff Garrett who produced that?
It was. Very good.
Yeah, and a very different take, I'm sure, than what The Drifters did.
Well, what happened was I remember I came up in the elevator one day with the owner of the publishing company we worked for, and he said, I got a cover of that Drifter song you guys wrote. And I said, who did it? He said, Snuff Garrett produced it. And I said, is he making R&B records now? And he said, no. And I said, uh-oh.
Now, I will say, we had Gary Lewis on our show last summer. Yeah, he was very complimentary about the quality of that song. Gave him a career, for goodness sakes.
Well, he had, in all fairness to him, he had a lot of hits after it.
Absolutely. You made your way to Greenwich Village to continue your musical journey. How did you first come to meet Bob Dylan?
At that recording session.
That was the first time. Oh, wow. Well, and I'm not going to ask you to tell that story because I know you've told that a lot.
you've seen that clip.
I have, yeah. But especially, boy, the movie, the Scorsese movie was so good, and you were such a big part of that. What was that experience like working with Martin Scorsese?
Never saw him.
Really? Wow.
Informationally speaking, all he did in that film was edit it.
Well, he did a heck of a job because it came out so very good. Now, we know about the story of Like a Rolling Stone. You also played organ on the Stones' You Can't Always Get What You Want. And did I read correctly that you also played French horn on that?
Yes.
Wow. And then, of course, the formation of Blood, Sweat, and Tears and that very first album, which to me and a lot of people was the best album the group ever did. Why did that go wrong? Why weren't you happy? Why weren't other people happy with that configuration?
I was primarily happy. The drummer and the guitar player were very unhappy with me. So rather than fight that, I just left.
You made your way eventually to Georgia, the Atlanta area, and you heard Lynyrd Skynyrd playing in a local establishment. Like their music, and I thought it was very interesting, too. You point out that this group, people think of them as the epitome of Southern rock, a freewheeling sound, but these were professionals who did it right and worked very hard, even on those solos.
Well, they had a very intelligent, hard-working ethic. I didn't find that out till after I was smitten, but then when I worked with them, I had never really worked with anyone who had been so well prepared for the making of a record. Most people are not as well prepared.
We're talking.
And that's why it takes months sometimes to make an album.
We're talking with Al Cooper here on Downtown. How long did it take you to make one of the most acclaimed albums of the 1960s, Super Session, with Mike Bloomfield and Stephen Stills?
About a week.
Wow. So there must have been some preparation going into that then.
Well, no, because the whole concept of that album was it was a jam session. So the actual recording was two nights.
Well, that was an incredible piece of work there. I read a comment, too, that you knew Jimi Hendrix. You were sort of neighbors with him. And you've said that the public persona of Jimi Hendrix was not at all what he was like as a human being.
That's true. It was the antithesis. He was a very quiet, gentle, nice guy. And I could count on probably one hand the times that we spent together, but they were wonderful times.
We've had a
very nice guy.
We've had occasion on this show to talk with several people, Jimmy Webb, Mickey Dolenz, Van Dyke Parks, and his son Keith, about one of my favorite musicians of all time, Harry Nilsson. You knew him. You produced the tribute album. What are your memories of Harry Nilsson?
Well, I had, when he first came out, I went berserk over his recording of Without Her, which I eventually covered on the Blood, Sweat, and Tears album.
Right.
But when his version came out, I went nuts over that. And then everything that came after it, whatever album it was on, I went nuts over that album. But that track specifically, I thought, was beautifully produced, arranged. And so when I did it, I didn't attempt to copy it. I did it a whole other way because I didn't want to, I couldn't mess with how great they did it.
Speaking of music that you love, for your money, is Pet Sounds the greatest album in the history of pop and rock music?
I would have to say so.
In terms of the production, the songwriting, or the whole package?
The whole package.
Your book, Backstage Passes and Backstabbing Bastards, it's been out in three different versions. I think it's the best book ever about the music business. And you didn't pull any punches with that one.
Well, I mean, if you're going to write a book, you might as well, tell the truth.
Well, you certainly did that, I love the stories. So terrific. And there, as you look around today, you're still making music, you're still performing. What's the state of rock music here in 2018?
Well, when I was very young, when I was like 11 and 12, I fell in love with rock and roll, which was sort of new at the time. And my parents and people their age were disgusted by it, and that helped. Then I had my own music, and old people didn't like it. When rap music came out, I sort of embraced it because I was a big fan of soul music, and the full transition didn't happen immediately with rap music. And as rap music became more popular, it changed from its original version, and I hated it. And I hated it for two reasons. One is it was mostly talking, and it was fake instruments. There weren't real instruments in it. It was all synthesizers. And there was a lot of cursing, which wasn't necessary. And then I looked at myself and I said, well, you're just like your parents. It's exactly like what my parents thought about rock and roll. And I said, okay, so I'm old, but it doesn't reach me. But it's not intended for me.
No, but it's interesting, too.
So I completely understand that. But I can't listen to it.
It's interesting, though, that your music has been sampled possibly more than anybody by those rap and hip-hop artists.
That's called ironic.
Exactly. That's what it is indeed. Well, Al, it's a real treat for us to have a chance to talk with you. Glad we were able to catch up with you. Thank you so much for making time for us.
My pleasure.
Well, that is the legendary Al Cooper here on the Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning. When we come back, baseball season opens up this weekend. Well, of course, that means fantasy baseball does as well. We'll get some insight into that and maybe can help your team get a little bit better with Al Melchior. It's next on the Best of Downtown Z62 Retro Radio.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Angelo's Pizzeria has locations in both Bangor and in Hamden, and they're your home for the best pizza, homemade pasta, and Italian takeout. Angelo's Pizzeria, located on Hammond Street in Bangor and Main Road South in Hamden, features a menu that also includes seafood, sandwiches, wraps, and salads. That means there's sure to be something for every member of the family. Stop into Angelo's Pizzeria, Hammond Street, Bangor, Main Road South in Hamden.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Your home should be your sanctuary, the place that keeps you safe and warm in the winter and cool and dry in the summer. The people at Penobscot Home Performance want to make sure your home is safe, healthy, comfortable, and energy efficient. They take a big picture view with practical steps and use their experience to ensure that the space and systems in your house are working better together. Contact them today for a free energy consultation by visiting PenobscotHomePerformance.com. We're back on the Best of Downtown on a Sunday morning talking fantasy, well, fantasy baseball at least. Al Melchior, the host of the Fantasy Baseball Hour and a writer for FanGraphs and Fantrax, joined us on Thursday's show to offer some tips for the coming season and maybe help you out with your team and your draft as well. Let's get right to it and talk about one of the more recent acquisitions, and you wrote about this as well, the move Baltimore made, picking up Alex Cobb. What should we expect from a guy who pitched a lot of innings coming back from injury, but was a little bit erratic last year?
Yeah, he was. And, you know, I think the results actually, even though they were maybe a bit underwhelming, might have even been too good to be true in a way, because he really was one of the pitchers in the majors last year that was most prone to allowing contact. But the control was good as it usually is for him. But, you know, his bread and butter in the past was usually, you know, being a pretty decent strikeout pitcher, getting a lot of ground balls. He didn't do really an outstanding job in either dimension last year. I did read a piece within the last couple of days that he intentionally stayed away from using the changeup last year, you know, just coming back from Tommy John, and that he's going to use it more again this year. Maybe that'll be a good strikeout pitch for him. But from a fantasy perspective, I really don't have much interest in Alex Cobb.
One of the more intriguing guys out there, whether it's from a fantasy perspective or just as a baseball fan in general, is Ohtani and the experiment that the Angels are going with. If you're drafting Ohtani, do you look at him as a pitcher, as a hitter, neither, or both?
I was, you know, there's big debate within the fantasy community of, you know, how should he be treated, one player, you know, separate pitcher, hitter. I was very excited that, you know, some of the big sites were able to work out, you know, and engineer their game so you could actually use him as both a hitter and a pitcher, you know, switching him around, you know, in different slots in your roster. But, you know, it hasn't gone that well this spring. I do have much more hope for him as a pitcher. So, you know, even if you're in the sort of format like a daily lineup change format where one day you can have him in your rotation and the next day you can have him DH, I'll be keeping my eye on how he develops throughout the season. But I don't have that much hope for him as a fantasy DH this year. So, in drafting him, I have some interest in him as a pitcher. But, you know, again, the innings are likely to be limited. Angels are planning to go with the six-man rotation. He may only, in the best-case scenario, maybe throw 160 innings this year. And the results in spring haven't been that great. I don't worry too much about that. But, yeah, I think in terms of drafting him for him to be an all-purpose player for me, I think maybe that could be another year or more down the road.
Kind of a big-picture question. We've seen such a big spike in home runs in the last couple of seasons for whatever reason, the ball, whatever it might be. Has that now devalued the home run and power hitters?
I mean, it has to a degree. I think it's just it ratchets everybody's numbers up a bit. So, if you look at it from the perspective of, you know, I want to have X number of 20-plus homer hitters in my roster, yeah, that's not going to be a useful way to look at it. But in terms of, you know, looking at the relative power from one player to another, I'm trying to remember where I saw this. Unfortunately, I'd love to give the author some credit. It was a piece on Fantrax. The author did a study of looking over the last several years at standard deviations. And while the numbers have gone up overall, the standard deviations have stayed pretty constant. So, the elite power hitters are still elite. They're just being elite by hitting 40 instead of 30, you know, or roughly thereabouts. So, you know, you just got to, you know, judge the players in terms of their relative production, which is really what you should be doing anyway.
Every year, whether you're in an old school 4x4 league or a 5x5, always people out there looking for cheap sources of saves and those guys who could emerge from the pack as one of the many people who inherits a closer role as the season goes on. Where should a smart shopper go looking for some of those kind of guys?
Well, the thing that you have to keep in mind is that probably two-thirds of the opening day closers won't be closers on the last week of the season.
Right.
As one example, we had the Tout Wars auctions this past weekend in New York. I'm in the mixed league auctions, 15 teams, 5x5, but with OBP. And I haven't splurged on saves in any of my prior auctions or drafts. Maybe it was just boredom or frustration on my part. But I went and splurged on Kenley Jansen. I spent the $25 it took to get him. I think that's a reasonable price for Jansen. And he's one of really a very small number, maybe half a dozen closers, that I really trust this year. There's him. There's Kimbrel. I actually think even though he doesn't have a lot of closing experience, that Brad Hand is pretty solid. Raisel Iglesias.
Well, let me ask you about one, because this was bad planning. I should have had you on yesterday before I had to submit my keepers in my league. I hung on to Cody Allen of the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah. No, great call. Because if I kept going another 2, 3, 4 closers that I think are, you know, proven, reliable, they have the good, peripheral stats to back up, the good fantasy stats, the good surface stats. Cody Allen's one of the best and one of the most consistent. He's not a Kenley Jansen level in terms of overall production, but I think he matches him in terms of consistency. So I think that was a great move on your part.
Excellent. I like to hear that. Well, who is someone who might emerge from one of these bullpens that's in disarray right now, or might overtake a closer who's only about two blown saves away from losing the job?
Yeah, and again, you know, given that I don't, you know, trust at least two-thirds of the closers. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities there. The St. Louis Cardinals situation, I talked about that on my show earlier today. It's wide open. They don't have a designated closer. I really like Tyler Lyons because I figure he's good enough to get saves. He's good enough to keep the job if it's given to him. But even if that doesn't work out, He's the kind of guy who in relief could pitch a lot of multiple inning stints, maybe finish with 75, 80 innings, get you a lot of strikeouts and really good ratios. So he's a non for sure closer that I like. I think the Marlins situation could be fluid. I like Brad Ziegler well enough, but I think, you know, they've been grooming Kyle Bearcloth for that role for about a year now. I think he'll get his shot at it. And Drew Steckenrider is another one in that Marlins bullpen maybe to keep an eye on, although development-wise, he's just a little bit behind where Bearclaw is. So those are a few names. And the Mets situation, I'm not really trusting Jerry Familia. That is at least nominally a committee situation to start the year. And I really like Anthony Swarzak a lot. I like him better than Familia or A.J. Ramos. And like Tyler Lyons, he's a guy who, you know, as the consolation prize, just might give you a lot of really good innings, but I think could wind up with a bunch of saves as well.
We're talking with Al Melchior here on Downtown. You wrote about some of your draft day targets, possible sleepers. One of them, Kevin Kiermaier, is he one of those classic post-hype kind of guys?
I do like him. I guess, you know, there was a little bit of hype this time last year. There certainly was much hype for him as a prospect because he was considered really almost a defense-only type outfielder. But I think coming out of 2016, he finished that year really strong. I think a lot of people saw the potential for a little bit of power, more than a little bit of stolen base help, and a good OBP. And I think after last season where he got hurt yet again and where he didn't quite meet the expectations, maybe that label does fit him. And so I like the price, given that the expectations have lowered a bit on Kiermaier. But I think all of those parts of the package that we were looking for a year ago are still there.
You also like Tanner Roark of Washington.
I do, just because he's in a category of players that are, you know, pretty steady, unspectacular in any one category, but the whole package is something that not only can help you, but you can get it very cheaply. So Roark should give you a good number of innings in an environment now where starters are going shorter and shorter innings per start. Relievers are becoming more important. I think he's one of the more reliable starters for innings, and he'll be decent enough for strikeouts to get a lot of wins with the lineup that's supporting him there. So I just think, you know, he's going far too late and far too cheaply, but that benefits you if you get him.
Al, let's look. Who are a couple guys that are at the other end of the spectrum, those players who may go too early or for too much money based on the stats last year that aren't really supported by some of the underlying numbers?
I'd say the first person who comes to mind in that category is Mike Zunino. He's getting drafted really, really early. I think it was the Labor AL and one of the industry drafts, where he actually went for a dollar more than Salvador Perez, and that just had me scratching my head because Perez is steady and proven and an absolute workhorse who will, you know, compile a lot of innings and a lot of counting stats, if nothing else. And, you know, Zunino had an apparent breakout last year where he hit for good power, and the batting average didn't decimate you, but he, you know, struck out more than a third of the time and got on base on balls and play at a rate that just doesn't look sustainable. So, you know, maybe the power is legit for Zunino, but you know, I wouldn't be totally shocked if he hit 210 this year. And that's, you know, there's plenty of catchers out there who can give you power and hit, you know, 230. So I think he's getting very overdrafted. And I wouldn't say so much based on the stats of last year, but what people are projecting for him this year. I don't quite understand why Manuel Margot is getting drafted as early as he is. Speed power combos are hard to find. But you asked me about Kevin Kiermaier a couple minutes ago. I think Kiermaier is a little bit more proven. I think a worst case scenario, he can give you. And I don't think Margot is going to be a big power guy. I think, you know, you're just looking at maybe, you know, him being a 15 home run, you know, 25, maybe 30 steal guy. That's a tough combination to find, but I think you can get that same thing from Kiermaier and get it much more cheaply.
If you're in a pure draft, not an auction, who's the first pitcher you take?
I've got Kershaw number one, but I really do view Kim, along with Chris Dale, Max Scherzer, and Corey Kluber, is almost completely interchangeable. So I haven't actually drafted Kershaw, but I do have Kluber in a few leagues because he's typically the fourth of the four to go. So while I do have Kershaw number one, I'm just as happy to wait for any of the other three.
All right, this one's purely for me before we let you go. I'm in an American League only league, and I kept, based on what he did last year, but, and I don't know that he'll repeat this, but Andrelton Simmons put up some numbers last year that were a little bit out of the norm for him. Can he sustain any of that?
I think he probably can. It looked sustainable, and it was a little bit of a belated breakout. You can maybe call it post-height. For Simmons, because when he first came up with the Braves, he's a great contact hitter, showed a little bit of pop initially, and you thought, well, you know, maybe this is a guy who can hit 290 and you know, give you 20 home runs. Of course, now we're in an environment where 20 home runs doesn't mean as much, but he could be in that 15 to 20 range and help you with batting average. So I like Simmons just fine. I will just say that I haven't drafted him in any leagues. There's a shortstop I really like who I think could put up fairly similar numbers to Simmons, and he's going much, much later, and that's Ketel Marte of the Diamondbacks. Mm-hmm. So while I think Simmons can repeat what he did, I think there are other shortstops, Marte most notably among them, who could do something similar for a better price.
That's Al Melchior talking fantasy baseball here on Downtown. Thanks to Al. Thanks to Al Cooper. Thanks as well to Ed Rice and actress Stephanie Drake for a fun get-together here on the Best of Downtown. Hope the rest of your Sunday goes well. Hope you'll join us, too, on Monday afternoon with Major League Baseball writer Evan Davis, Maine baseball coach Nick Durba, April Wright, a cybersecurity social media expert, will talk with us about the places your kids can go to hide from you, particularly on social media. Mike Lowe of the Press Herald, movie reviews from Alan Adams of the Maine Edge, and results of Downtown Madness voting in the second round of the Maine and national brackets. They're posted right now on the website, downtownwithrichkimble.com. You can cast your vote right there and help pick our favorite guest of the last year on the program. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon at 4 right here on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna be all right now.